Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a vice president and branch leader with Fidelity Investments, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation with Tony Zhang. Tony is a chief strategist of Options Play, and Tony's also a frequent guest of CNBC. Tony, welcome. It's good to see you, and it's great to be back with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Roberta. It's been a wild week, so looking forward to diving into what has changed in the broader markets.
To say the least. So today is Thursday, March 19th, 2026. And as Tony has already mentioned, I think we've all continued to have a watchful eye on the markets and how they're responding to our current headlines. So Tony, let's not waste any more time and get today's conversation started with your macroeconomic view. What has your attention?
Yeah, yesterday was a bit of a triple whammy in the markets. We had in the morning that PPI number that came out substantially hotter than expected. And what's interesting about that specific number was that the PPI number was based on data that was before the Iran war. And we already started to see specifically non-energy and non-food and non-energy inflation tick up higher. And on top of that, energy and oil prices were already ticking up higher from an inflation perspective, not even accounting for what's happened as a result of oil now being above $100. So inflation at the moment is probably one of the biggest drivers of overall sentiment, because that has factored into the FOMC's calculus with regards to whether or not we see rate cuts in 2026. At the moment, we saw yesterday Chairman Powell's statements take a much more hawkish tone here in the broader markets, and that's why we saw the Dow break below the 200-day moving average. Seven of the 19 committees, voting members of the FOMC committee are now suggesting that they do not see any rate cuts in 2026. And the median dot plot is showing only one rate cut right now in December. So right now, everything is being driven off of the inflationary environment that we see that's pushing back rate cut expectations. And you add on top of the fact that currently you have the Middle East conflict that is continuing to drive oil prices higher. This is just continuing to strain that concern around inflation and what that means for interest rates at the moment. So if you look at the 10-year yields, we're back above 4.3%. This is a pretty substantial change from where we were hoping to be even just a few weeks ago, where we were expecting the first rate cut to happen in June. Now that's being pushed out to December, and the dot plot now showing the first rate cut being in December is a pretty substantial change in just a few weeks, largely as a result of the conflict that we're seeing here in the Middle East. And this puts the Fed in a pretty significant bind, because not only is inflation rising substantially faster than expected, but we also have a deteriorating labor market. That February job print of 92,000 jobs lost in and softer GDP is really showing that the economy is cooling at a pace that is starting to accelerate here to the downside, which is essentially the worst case scenario for the Fed. Rising inflation, cooling economy. This is a really tough spot for the Fed to be in, because there's really not much they can do. They can't cut rates to offset the cooling economy, and if anything, they might have to raise rates to offset sort of the inflation that we're starting to see pop up as a result of higher oil prices. So if you look at kind of how the equity markets have responded, the S&P has now broken to the downside the range that it was trading in over the last few weeks, the last couple of months. And if you look at small caps, this is really where I think the markets are being a little bit more sensitive. The IWM recently just broke down below that 250 level here, and we're targeting 230 to the downside. And the reason we're looking at small caps right now is because small caps is going to be a little bit more sensitive to the stagflationary environment that we're going to be in, or the stagflation environment that we are in right now. And also, if you look at tech, if you look at the Qs, we've now broken below this major support level at 595, and that puts 570 and 550 downside as targets here. So the major support levels that we were hoping to hold here over the last few months, they have all been broken across the board. The S&P, the Dow, small caps, the NASDAQ 100, they've all been broken here. So now we're starting to target some of the downside targets that we've been talking about for months as realistic targets now here to the downside. And this is all driven off of the macro conditions that have substantially changed in the last 3 weeks. You know, many times we see these dips as buying opportunities, but I think this is for the first time where these dips that we're seeing is not necessarily, in my opinion, a buying opportunity just yet. The macro conditions have deteriorated substantially in just the last 3 weeks, and that's completely changed my views here. And even the one trade that has managed to hang on through this stagflationary environment, which has been the AI trade, is starting to show some cracks as well. We saw that Micron earnings yesterday, blowout earnings, yet the stock continued to move lower after hours. This is really showing that even AI is not immune to this war and the inflation concerns that we see here in the broader markets. And that was the one last sector, if you will, that was holding the line. So outside of energy that is benefiting from higher oil prices, all other sectors now are in the red. And unfortunately, at the moment, I see some further downside here for equities going forward.
Tony, thank you for your perspective. And that's certainly a lot to digest. With some of those market risks that you've noted, inflation, geopolitical escalation, and energy prices, where do you see the next risk-off rotation that investors might be seeking?
Yeah, we're already starting to see some early signs of rotation into the bond market, and specifically the treasury side of the bond market. We're seeing that on the longer end of the curve right now. We're seeing the curve steepen a little bit. And this is really as a result of the stagflationary environment that we find ourselves in. So It's a flight to safety, and even gold is not holding in as that safe haven asset, as we saw gold collapse here yesterday. So we're seeing kind of risk assets across the board being sold, and we're seeing that rotation into treasuries that we're seeing.
That insight's really appreciated, Tony. So let's shift gears and get tactical. And so based on what we've talked about so far today, let's talk about the trade idea you've brought for us today. What opportunity are you seeing in the market right now?
Yeah. So based on that macro outlook that I currently have, I think there's two ways that you can play this. One, you have to look for companies with plenty of safety and quality to look for in terms of investing. We're seeing that across the board. We're seeing that in across some of the consumer staple names. We're seeing some of that in the communication names, especially companies that don't have a ton of debt on their books. Those are the types of companies that we're typically targeting in terms of on the long side. And then at the same time, we see some tactical opportunities to take some short opportunities. So the first one I want to take a look at here is taking a look at some of those quality names. And the one I'm taking a look at here right now is Netflix. Netflix has been a pretty bulletproof name with regards to concerns around inflation. The stock has suffered quite a bit here this year, but on the back of the fact that they're no longer pursuing the bid with Warner Brothers, the stock has recovered. And I think that is an opportunity for some investors to pick up Netflix at a discount compared to where it was trading just last year. Now, the stock, as you can see, if you look at a chart here recently, just reclaimed that $90 resistance level here after the news came out that they were no longer going to be pursuing the bid for Warner Brothers. And the stock has been consolidating since then. It's pulled back a little bit back to that $90 level here right now. And I think that pullback is the opportunity for investors. As long as they can hold around that $86 to $90 gap level, that's really where I think their upside opportunity remains in place towards that 105, 110 level here to the upside. And this works because, you know, Netflix has really changed or shifted, if you will, from a growth story to more of a quality and margin story, because they now have that dual revenue platform. They have subscriptions, and they've been able to prove out that the advertisement side of the arm is, or advertisement side of the business is now growing at a pretty substantial pace. Now they have 50 million subscribers on the ad supported tiers, and that has been showing to generate a fair amount of cash flow for Netflix investors. And more importantly, it's a much more lower cost to acquisition customer on that ad supported model. And that's going to be a much cleaner path to growing the business, especially in the international markets, which is where they've been focusing over the last couple of years. And if you look at the business, you know, it's trading at around 30 times forward earnings, which is essentially in line with the rest of the communications industry. And but the thing about that is the fact that Netflix actually grows at a substantially faster pace than its peers. And far more importantly, net margins on Netflix has grown substantially in the last couple of years. Their profit margins are now approaching 25% versus the industry median is close to around 10%. So the fact that they're growing faster, substantially more profitable, yet they're trading at a valuation that's essentially in line with the rest of the industry is what makes this the type of trade or the type of company that I'd be looking for in this type of more uncertain outlook. Not to mention that Netflix as a whole has just managed to navigate through all forms of volatility and market downside over the last couple of decades. That's really the type of quality and consistency you're looking for in this type of uncertain market. And like I said, the ad tier is really what's been driving this higher margin growth here. Operating leverage is starting to kick in, especially as the number of subscribers that they have now means that they don't have to continue to scale as much content as they do in terms of growth. And that's been leading to just higher operating leverage and that higher margin that we see here. And now they're generating a significant amount of cash flow that they can now start returning back to investors that they really haven't been focused on so much in the first, 10, 15 years of operating that business where they're focusing more on growth. And I think for those reasons, that's why this company makes a lot of sense in this type of market environment, the macro environment that we see ourselves in. So the trade structure that I want to use here is to go out to the May 1st, and that's a weekly expiration. And I'm looking at selling a credit spread, essentially taking advantage of the higher implied volatility and volatility that we're generally seeing here in the markets and trying to capture that. And I'm looking at selling the 93x86 put vertical here on Netflix. Earlier today, you can collect about $2.55 for that credit spread. And essentially what you're doing is here is you're selling that 93 put, collecting just around $5 for that put option. And then you're buying the $86 put against it, paying about $2.35 for that $86 put. So net, you're collecting a little over $2.50 for this $7 wide credit spread. And this essentially gives you the opportunity to profit if Netflix either rises or stays put where it is right now and only suffer a loss if the stock declines below, roughly that $90 level, which is the break-even price here on Netflix. And $90 level reflects kind of the support level that we see here on that gap higher. And the lower strike price, that $86 put, reflects kind of the gap lower, the gap level that we have. So if it fills that gap and it stays above 86, you're able to take advantage of a credit spread like the one that I've laid out here.
Tony, thank you for sharing that trade idea and the thesis behind it. I'm really curious to know, based on the fundamentals you shared, there are many strengths in Netflix's business. So as an investor, when you're trying to come up with your own thesis, what are some of the tips or tricks you use to help validate the information that you're seeing on a fundamental level, but using technical analysis to do that?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. And generally what you want to do is you want to look for major support and resistance levels. And specifically, you want to look for major support and resistance levels that formed around the time that major catalyst, with your fundamental thesis. So for example, when Netflix essentially is no longer pursuing the Warner Brothers deal, we saw the stock gap up from 86 to 90. And that kind of forms a support level that you want to reference going forward. And you want to see those levels hold from a technical perspective to validate your fundamental thesis, right? So that's why I'm using some of those levels when I'm constructing my credit spread, because if the stock gets back below 86, that's a good sign that the fundamental story here is not playing out the same way that we're expecting to, and the technical picture is sort of validating that. So you generally want to look at, major horizontal support and resistance levels that form around the time that major catalysts have happened that that form your fundamental thesis. And those are some of the reference levels that you want to keep an eye out on. If they break, that's a good sign that perhaps the fundamental thesis is not playing out the way that you expect it to.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you. And so looking at this trade, would you share with us some ways you would consider managing this through May?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from a trade management perspective, the most important side that you want to consider is if this trade does not go in the direction that you expect it to. So whenever you sell a credit spread here, I'm collecting around $2.50 for this credit spread. The rule of thumb is that if you lose 100% of what you can potentially make on a credit spread, it's time to reconsider the trade. So if I'm collecting $2.50, and what that means is that if this trade loses another $2.50 on where it is trading at right now. So if I sold this for $2.50, and let's say going forward, the stock moves lower, and now this credit spread is trading for around $5, which means that I've lost around $2.50, that would be a good sign that the thesis that I think is going to play out here is not happening the way that I expect it to, and it's time to consider closing out this trade and moving on. If the trade goes in my favor, you're going to have a lot more opportunities to adjust your position. And we're actually going to look at that in one of our lookbacks today. But the most important thing that you want to plan for is if the trade doesn't go in the direction you expect it to, that you know exactly when you're going to get out of this trade at a loss and simply move on. If the trade goes in your favor, you're going to have a lot more options as to what you can do.
Okay. I appreciate that perspective. So, Tony, I understand we have another trade that we're looking at today. Can you share with us where you're seeing additional opportunity today?
Yeah. The next trade I want to take a look at here is to the bearish side and taking into account the macroeconomic and geopolitical situation that we find ourselves in. And the trade I want to take a look at here is United Airlines. And essentially, the macro and geopolitical conditions that we find ourselves in are essentially a worst case scenario for airlines, specifically global airlines like United Airlines. Essentially, higher oil prices, that's going to compress margins substantially for airlines as they all try to pass on the higher oil prices to passengers. That's going to slow down growth for general travel. And then just in general, travel disruption in the Middle East. We continue to see air travel in the Middle East essentially remain at a standstill for now going on 3 weeks. This is somewhat unprecedented. So, global travel is starting to get disrupted. Higher oil prices is going to factor into discretionary spending. And this is all, like I said, a worst case scenario for airlines at the moment. If you look at the stock here, if you look at a chart here for United Airlines, the stock is making a bit of a bounce here after a break below that $95 support level here from a few weeks ago. And that rally that we started to see here over the last few days, I think, is an opportunity for investors to seek adding some bearish exposure where the risk reward looks more favorable to the downside, especially as the stock is in a clear downtrend right now. And the rally is simply a potential for that continuation of that downtrend. And my downside target here is really a support level that hasn't been in place since the middle of last year. It's around $75 here to the downside. And again, this is all on the back of higher oil prices, which directly compresses margins for airlines, which already operate on fairly thin margins. United Airlines is not as bad as American, but certainly doesn't enjoy the cushions that Delta has with regards to profit margins, around 5%. Those are pretty thin margins. And these are the types of conditions that, historically speaking, have broken airlines. Higher oil prices, if you look at kind of previous oil strike, oil price spikes, those have in certain times have bankrupted airlines. Now, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen to United Airlines, but we do have the conditions that make travel more difficult, especially as oil prices rise, and just With the stagflationary environment, we expect consumer spending to also come in. And with inflation rising, that's all going to hurt the bottom line here for United Airlines. The one thing that looks perhaps compelling for some of these airlines is just how cheap the valuations are. You know, United is trading around 7x forward earnings, which in normal conditions would look attractive. But given the macro and geopolitical tensions that we see are the markets are in right now, I think that that's more of a value trap. And I don't think that just because it's cheap, now is the right time to be buying the airlines. I think that there is going to be some further pain ahead for these airlines before they become investment opportunities. So the way I want to play this here is to seek further downside by buying options, even though options are expensive. I think that you can structure this in a way where it still looks attractive to be a buyer. And I'm going out to the April monthly expiration. I'm looking at buying the 92.5 put options and selling the $75 puts against that. You can pay about $5.70 for that debit spread earlier today, which gives you about a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio. You're risking $570 per contract if United Airlines stays above that 92.5 strike price by that April expiration. But if we find American Airlines below 75, then what we see is around nearly a $1,200 gain on this particular trade. So you get, like I said, you know, a little better than 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio. And that's the type of trade setup that I like when I'm seeking sort of a tactical bearish play on a stock like this that just has all the headwinds essentially, unfortunately, working against it in this condition.
Tony, thank you so much for laying this trade out for us. So in your thesis, certainly there are many risks and challenges facing the airline right now. And so if your outlook is correct, how would you manage that trade through April and have the potentiality to continue to capture gains as the stock price declines if, as time goes on, these conditions continue to be true?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And with debit spread trades like this, and that is true for all debit trades, so whether you're just buying a simple call or a put or a debit spread like this, the great thing about these types of trades is that the management of them tends to be fairly straightforward. Like I said, I think the most important thing from a trade management perspective to make sure that you have a plan for is when you take a loss. That's something that you should have a plan for before you get into a trade. So if I'm paying roughly $5.70 for this debit spread, the rule of thumb is once it loses 50% of what you've paid for it, it's probably a good sign that the trade's not working out and it's worth potentially closing out the trade, saving the other half of the premium that is left in the trade potentially for the next trade that you're going to make. So if you pay $5.70 for this, essentially if it loses roughly $2.85, it's time to consider cutting your losses and getting out of this trade. Now, if United Airlines moves lower here towards that $75 level, that's where you're going to have a lot of options to potentially adjust your trade and turn what is a nice win into potentially a home run. And that's what we're actually going to look at during our look back today, is a trade where very similar trade structure to United Airlines. It's a bearish put spread that we put on SPY. The trade is worked out and what you can do once the trade does work in your favor. But the most important plan that you need to have before you get into a trade is what happens if this trade does not work out that you expect it to. Once the trade works out, you have a lot of options.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. So let's do just that. So we often do save time in our conversation each week to look back at previous trades. And of course, often lived experiences can be our best teachers. So today, I understand that look back is on an earlier trade on SPY. Can you update us on what's happened since that first trade?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few weeks back, I laid out a bearish thesis on SPY for this exact scenario because we were starting to see some cracks emerge. We weren't sure if the markets were going to break down here, but we wanted to protect ourselves in case it did. And that's exactly what's happening. So at the time, we bought the March expiration, which actually expires tomorrow. We bought the 675, 645 put vertical for about $7.45 at the time, spending just a little over 1% 1% of the ETS value to essentially buy ourselves 1 month worth of protection. And turns out that protection was well worth it, because what we spent $7.45 on is now worth $19. That's about 155% gain on our initial investment. Now, here's the thing, is that you can simply take that gain and walk away. There's nothing wrong with that. However, given the macro conditions that we find ourselves in, I'm concerned that there's more downside here. And this is really where you have the opportunity to turn what is already a really nice gain into potentially a huge home run. So what I'm going to do is, instead of just simply taking my profits and walking away and moving on to the next trade, I'm going to roll that profit into the next trade. I'm going to go out to the April expiration. So what I'm doing is, I'm basically going out 1 month in time, because my options are expiring tomorrow. I'm going to go out to the April expiration, buying myself one more month of downside protection. I'm basically keeping the same trade structure, but updating the strike prices. So I'm buying the 657 puts and selling the 620 puts against that. Earlier today, that's going to cost me a little bit more than what I paid for the protection back in February, but that's because volatility is much higher now. So that's going to now cost me about $9.92 for that debit spread. Or I'm sorry, about $9. About $9.92 for that debit spread. And what that means is that if you take the profits from the first trade and roll into the second trade, what's really interesting is that I have enough profits from my first trade to cover the entire cost of the second trade, which means that no matter what happens, even if the market bounces right back higher and gets back down, you know, the S&P gets back up to 7,000, the most I can gain on this, I'm sorry, the least that I can gain on this particular trade is going to be $163 per contract, meaning the most I can lose is going to be a positive number. At the flip side, if let's say SPY is below 620 by that April expiration, I'm looking at a gain of over $3,800. So what was originally risking $745 to buy that downside protection back in February could potentially turn into $3,800 worth of gain. So we're talking about a really nice, nearly 5-to-1 risk to reward ratio on this trade if SPY continues to move lower here. And this is what I mean before, when you were asking me about managing this trade and how to structure management of these trades, is that once you have a winning trade, you have a lot of options as to what you can do. And I think that some of the best case scenario when you have a winning trade, especially if the thesis that you originally had is turning out to be correct, and you think there's still room for that thesis to go, like we do here with the macro conditions right now, I can turn what was about a $750 risk into potentially $3,800 worth of gain. And that's really where it's so important to make sure that you limit your losses when it doesn't work out in your favor. And when the trade does go in your favor, you take opportunities to turn what is a nice win into potentially a home run.
Thank you for this example. And we know SPY is a reflection of and represents an index. And so I'm curious to know, do you view the process differently when you're setting an upside or downside target, when you're looking at the index or something that represents the index or looks to track the index versus an individual stock?
That's a really great question. And one of the great things that I love about technical analysis, and why it's near and dear to my heart and is part of my process for every single trade, is that technical analysis can be applied consistently across all different products, asset classes, anything that you can price a chart in, whether you're looking at it on a daily chart, a weekly chart, or an hour-based chart, you can apply the same methodology to all charts. So you don't have to adapt to different asset classes, different types of products that you're trading. The one difference about index that is going to be different than stocks is the fact that you don't have the same type of earnings catalyst that can drive an index substantially higher or lower over a short period of time. Indices tend to have far fewer gaps than you do with equities. So those are the only differences that I typically see when I'm looking at these from a technical analysis perspective. But when I'm setting downside targets or upside targets using technical analysis, I'm using the same methodology regardless of what asset class or product that I'm trading.
Okay. This has been informative, Tony. Thank you so much. Audience, this does bring our conversation today to a close. And again, I want to thank all of our viewers for tuning in today. Tony, I have to stop and thank you once again for bringing us your thoughts and your trade ideas.
Thank you so much, Roberta. It's been a pleasure to be here, and I hope that this helps everyone navigate the uncertainty that we're starting to see here right now in the markets.
I agree. For our viewers, please don't forget to tune in to the Trading Strategy Desk follow-up session, which will be tomorrow, and that's at Friday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can sign up for that session by going to fidelity.com/InTheMoneyFollowUp. And if you're looking for further insights, or if you missed the live show today, be sure to sign up for the Active Investor Weekly Newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed today. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. Just a reminder to our viewers that we'll be back in 2 weeks on April 9th for another episode of In the Money. Until then, take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade.
ETFs are subject to market fluctuation and the risks of their underlying investments. ETFs are subject to management fees and other expenses. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stock involves risks, including the loss of principal. The securities of smaller, less well-known companies can be more volatile than those of larger companies.
Investing in bonds involves risk, including interest rate risk, inflation risk, credit and default risk, call risk, and liquidity risk. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Copyright 2026, FMR LLC. All rights reserved.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.